Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Rayshan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about your critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture, and all of the connections between. This morning, as always, we have a fun and interesting guest. Welcome, Kevin Dayhoff.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
What is your daytime occupation? What occupies your time?
I'm a writist and an artist, and that takes up a lot of my time. I write for the Baltimore Sun. I've written for the Baltimore Sun for 20 years. I'm also an elected official, constituent service, constituent request for information, problem solving is also an important part of my job. And I spend a lot of time with the fire company in my capacity as a fire police and military chaplain. I stay busy.
You have all of the bases covered.
Well, there is that. My wife is the executive director of Carol Food Sunday, and I'm the on-call helper for that effort. It's a really, really important effort in the community, and that takes up a good bit of time also.
Absolutely. The need for food and food insufficiency is one of the things that starts our communities on a good foot.
Food is just one of the basics of our quality of life. And of course, the cost of food has increased a great deal in the last number of years, and that's put an enormous amount of strain on the community. As a matter of fact, Caroline and I help a number of other pantries that are in the community. And there's the example of a pantry that started near an apartment complex. And at first, the owners of the apartment complex were, for whatever reasons that we didn't understand, they were uncomfortable. They were unhappy about the fact that a pantry had started in the neighborhood. But what they quickly discovered is that after the pantry was firmly established, folks who got behind in their rent decreased precipitously. Food costs a lot of money. What were we taught when we were much younger? Is it one third of our budget?
Something like that. Almost one third. Unless you live on a farm. And then you never go hungry, but you never have new socks. I think that's the difference there, because there's always something from the farm and the garden, but you're always running around barefoot.
Well, I lost a lot of sleep farming, too. I farmed for 25 years. I raised nursery stock for a living.
The horticulture and landscaping industry in the state of Maryland is in the top five agricultural products in the state.
It's huge. Agriculture is still the number one industry in Maryland. A lot of folks are not aware of that because we have so much in the way of urbanized area, but agriculture is also the number one industry in Carroll County, and it's extremely important. It makes up a great deal of our heritage, and that might tie in with the one thing that we had considered discussing today, and that is the role of food in the history of Carroll County. Historically, food has always brought communities together, and historically, food has always been part of the personality of a community.
You wrote a piece that caught my attention, and I have wanted to talk with you about this for almost 2 years now, Cranberries and Community. When we first moved to this area, in Westminster, the Cranberry Mall was the mall. Why did the Cranberry Mall have that name?
Because it was located not very far from a community in Carroll County by the name of Cranberry or Cranberry Station. And that is just north of Westminster. I guess Westminster has enveloped it to a certain extent, but it's still a distinct community on the banks of the Patapsco River, and there's the railroad that runs through it. But even before the railroad came through in 1861, that area of Carroll County was known for what made that area of Carroll County wealthy was growing cranberries. Cranberries in the cranberry bogs down there. If you go there today, there is no evidence whatsoever that it was a thriving mega metropolis or that the primary crop in that area were cranberries.
I'll be darned. It just kind of disappeared. Do you think that's because the bogs that the cranberries grow in, that sandy soil?
There's a lot of low-lying areas down there. And I used the wrong punctuation earlier there because one of the other products that area of Carroll County was really known for was whiskey distilleries. So distilleries and cranberries were what it is that made that area of Carroll County very wealthy. There were some very large distilleries in that area. Do they make any sort of alcoholic beverages out of cranberries? I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, I've heard them being used for wine, but they don't have a lot of sugar, so they have to
No, they don't have a lot of sugar. But there was a grist mill down in Cranberry by the name of Winter's Mill.
For which the school is named.
We'll be aware that they named the school after that. As a matter of fact, the mill race for the grist mill or Winter's Mill is now used today for the Westminster Water Treatment Plant, which, by the way, is known throughout the entire world for its scientific advances with membrane technology. It's just one of the best water filtration plants in the world. It just happens to be in Westminster.
Isn't it amazing the things in your own backyard that you don't really know until you put the connection together?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. When the Winters Mill Dam broke in about 1918, is what I think your article says, and the pond was never rebuilt. Is that why the power plant chose to go to that area, is because of the water?
I don't know about the power plant, because that is also where the power plant, Westminster, up until 1933, had its own privately owned gas and electric and steam plant. And that was also located in Cranberry. It was a highly industrialized area of the community. And it just fascinates me that when you drive through it today, now when you drive through it today, you obviously see the water treatment plant, and you obviously see what the city of Westminster has adaptively reused the power plant for utilities maintenance. But the really large Burkholder's distillery is no longer there. There was a huge dry goods and grocery store there. And I remember it as a child, but there's nothing there that could call to a person's attention that it was a thriving community. But many folks understand where Cranberry is and where Cranberry Road is and where the Cranberry Shopping Center is located. And many refer to the term, but they don't know the origins of the term.
It's really interesting. Off air, we were talking about the wheat in the area and the grains in the area, which makes sense for the distillery, and the quality of water makes sense for distilling. Cranberries were often wild, and then they began cultivation in the 1816s. All this fascinating stuff.
Cranberries have apparently been around for quite some time. Cranberries were a really important food source for the North American indigenous population and Native Americans. It was really important to them. And they, of course, introduced that to the French settlers and the English settlers when they first came to North America. In 1606, the Native Americans introduced cranberries to the French settlers. Cranberries were also grown in Europe and in England, so it was a familiar foodstuff for folks when they came here.
So let me make sure I have this right. It's not a new world food, if you will. It wasn't something that was in North America that was then transported back to Europe. There was a variety already in Europe. So when settlers came and they were introduced to it by the local peoples, it was somewhat already familiar.
Yeah, a lot of folks are not aware. Say, for example, tomatoes. Tomatoes were first discovered in Peru, and they were taken back to Spain and then taken back to Italy. But I think there was a European version of cranberries, and there was a North American version of cranberries.
When I go back through your article, it said that in the Netherlands, that the fruit similar to the cranberry had been grown. And in southern England, one of the names for this berry that lived in the low-lying areas were craneberries, like the bird, a crane.
I was thinking earlier of turkeys. Turkeys were discovered in North America, or was it Central America? And then they were introduced in the early 1500s to Europe. So that's one example of foodstuffs that originated in North America that were introduced to Europe, like tomatoes. But cranberries were over in England, and they were over in Europe long before folks came over here. And the Native Americans introduced them. I guess it was part of the early traditional Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners.
Well, it makes sense that cranberries and turkeys, and, you know, in some areas you get lasagna for New Year's because that's a big tradition. So the tomatoes, the turkeys, the cranberries, it all goes together for our holidays.
Oh, that's fascinating. Caroline Babylon, my wife, who's the executive director of Carol Food Sunday, I attended one of her lectures recently, and she was explaining that they had distributed 622 meals for Thanksgiving. And those meals, they distributed turkey. And this year, they also distributed chicken.
Oh, really?
I thought that was really good thinking out of the box on behalf of my wife, because some turkeys are too large for some families. So she gave folks the choice of also getting frozen chickens. But she also distributed mashed potatoes and gravy, corn, cranberry sauce. And I remember her emphasizing it was important that they include, that they purchase cranberry sauce for folks, the stuffing and the yams and the green beans and the mac and cheese, applesauce and brownies and collard greens. Now, I gave her a hard time because she didn't include okra in that. When I did civil rights work in the South many years ago, I was introduced to okra and I really enjoyed it. But the thing that really dismayed Caroline and me was the fact that we had a hard time getting a hold of sauerkraut.
That makes me sad. Sauerkraut's one of my favorite things on the Thanksgiving table.
But sauerkraut, and Caroline tells a very interesting version of the history of sauerkraut, of which I was not aware. Northern Carroll County was settled by Germans, and Southern Carroll County was settled by the English, and Western Carroll County was settled by the Scotch-Irish. So I always assumed, and the Germans that settled Northern Carroll County came from the north. They came in from Philadelphia and southern Pennsylvania, and they came south into northern Carroll County. But what Caroline explains is that those Germans did not introduce us to sauerkraut, according to tradition.
Oh, that doesn't make sense with what I know. I always think Germans and sauerkraut associated.
Well, but it was the Germans who came to Baltimore from that area of Eastern Europe that introduced sauerkraut to the Maryland area. And I always found that interesting. During the Civil War, almost a quarter of Baltimore's population was German. Half the population of Carroll County was German. And as a matter of fact, German was still spoken in Carroll County up through the Great Depression. You run across somebody who speaks some German every once in a while in Carroll County. And there was a church, as a matter of fact, that held services in German still up until recent years.
When we come back, let's continue this conversation and the oral history and the rich fabric that it brings.